Mem hey and Aleph, and we're up to Varav Kerab Yudas Sfirale, which is 2, 4, 6 lines down from the top. We've established that Rav holds like Rav Yehuda, and therefore, if there's Mos on the Mita, you're not allowed to move the Mita, and if there are Mos on the Mita and Bein HaShmashos, then we apply the principle of Migudis Katsoi. So now the Gemara is going to question this premise that we identify Rav with the Shita Rav Yehuda about Mukta. V'Rav ki Rav Yehuda Sfirulev ha'bo minei mitarav. The Talmidim asked the question to Rav. Ma'u l'taltulei shroga t'chanukasa. We're talking about the Hanukkah light. Now there was some people called Chaborim. It was a kind of a nation together with the Persians that ruled Babylonia at a certain period of time. And they had issued decrees of persecution against the Jewish people. And they would not allow the lighting of Ner Chanukah. So the Jewish people tried to light Ner Chanukah, and then they would, although the Ner Chanukah was lit outside in the courtyard, as soon as the Ner would be extinguished, they would move it back into the house so that it wouldn't be caught by these chaborim. So the question that was asked of Rav is on Shabbos, when they lit the Chanukah Erev Shabbos outside in the chotzer of the house, can they now be metaltil to bring the Chanukah, the whole lamp and so forth, back into the house so that they would not be caught by the chaborim, who were makpid that we shouldn't, that the Jewish people should not light Ner Chanukah. Now, exactly what the gzera of the Chaborim was, according to one definition, it was that a Jew should light not light Ner Chanukah. According to another definition, it means on their day, they had a certain day of idolatry and so forth, there was a festival on their calendar. It's called Yom Edom or Yom Edom. Then only in their monasteries, in their temples, would they light candles in honor of their deity. And nowhere else was it permitted to light candles. Now, if you go with the second definition, that it was Yom Edom, then they were madlik for the shulchan, right? If the Jewish people would light indoors on their tables, in order to illuminate their eating tables, that would not violate the decree of the Chaborim. So, for example, the Ner Shel Shabbos, which was placed on the table, there was never a question about that. But in the case of Ner Chanukah, which, number one, we don't put on our Shulchan, number two, we put it out on the Chatzer, and number three, we're not allowed to benefit from the Ner Chanukah, this is clearly a public violation of the decree of the Chaborim. And even though we have a Gemara that we learned back on Daf Chav Beis about Shas HaSakana, that we don't put the Ner out in the Chotzer, Meinich al Shulchan v'dayo, the Gemara says, but nevertheless, the Talmidim asked Rav, what would be the halacha if such a thing happened and we lit the night Ner Chanukah out in the Chotzer? And now, to limit the probability of being caught by the Chaborim, are we allowed to bring it back into the house? V'yomer lahu, and Rav responded, Shapir Dami, we're allowed to move it back in. Now, if Rav held like Rav Yehuda, then we'd certainly apply the principle of Migudis Katsoi. The Ner Chanukah was muktzah going into Shabbos, and therefore remains muktzah for the entire Shabbos, even after the candle is extinguished. The Gemara answers Shasat Chak Shaini, that you're right, Rav would certainly, based on Rabbi Yehuda's principles, have prohibited this. He only allowed it because this was a necessary, pressing moment. We want to limit the exposure to danger, to the possibility of getting caught by the Chaborim. And B'Shasat Chak, Rav said, you know what? We can rely on Rabbi Shimon. And it's not Muktzah. But L'chadchila, if not for the Shasat Chak, and we weren't interested in limiting the Shasa Sakone here, then for sure we would be machmir like Rabbi Yehuda. And the Gemara is going to prove that this was an exception because of Shasa Dchak. To Amri Le Rav Kahana Rav Ashi Le Rav, when two of the Amoroim, Rav Kahana Rav Ashi, heard this psak that Rav permitted taking the Ner Chanukah and moving it into the house after it extinguished, Hachi Hilchasa, they asked him, is this really the halacha? They were surprised because they thought that Rav certainly would reflect the psak of Rabbi Yehuda as far as Muktzah. V'yomer lehu, and Rav responded, Kedayu Rabbi Shimon lismach ala b'shasat chak. Then under these pressing circumstances, unusual circumstances, we're going to fall back on the position of Rabbi Shimon. But shalo b'shasat chak, obviously we would paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, and Rav would say it's awesome. Now at this point, Reish Lakish is going to analyze the shita of Rabbi Shimon, and are there situations in which even Rabbi Shimon perhaps would say we pass the red line and this would be muktzah? Boy minei Reish Lakish from Rabbi Yochanan, chitim shezra'on bekarka. He put these seeds into the ground. It's before what we call ashrosh. It hasn't been rooted, because if it's already rooted, then there would be a problem of Iser Ktsira, and you wouldn't be allowed to touch them or take them out of the ground because of Meleches Tolesh, which is a told of Ktsira. We also might go a step further, says the Ritva, and we have to assume that these seeds were not covered by Afar, because once they're covered by Afar, then there's an Iser Tiltal with regard to the Afar. And Beitzim Shetachas Hatarnagolis. And what's the story with eggs that were laid on Shabbos and they're underneath the hen? The mother hen is sitting on the eggs. And as the Ritva points out, Adayin Eilem Bahem Afroach. If they have an Afroach and there's a young chick that's inside the egg, then you can't be metaltal them. That's already a different sugi about Bali Chaim. Mao, would Rabbi Shimon allow you to take away the chitim from the ground and then go ahead and eat them on Shabbos? Would he allow you to take away the beitza from underneath the tarnagolas and eat it on Shabbos? Do we say ki lesle muktza, the Rabbi Shimon muktza? When does Rabbi Shimon say that there's no isa muktza? That's only hecha delo dache biyadayim. If on Erev Shabbos he didn't do an action with his hands that would demonstrate the fact that he has no intention to use it during Shabbos. Like, for example, let's say a behema dies on Shabbos, and that's memela. It's not something that he was docha biyadayim. Now he wants to use the meat and the flesh of the dead animal to feed his animals on Shabbos. And there's one point I have to add over here to enhance our understanding. What he did was, in the case of Chitim, he, Biyadayim, put the Zera into the Karka. In the case of the Beitza, what he wanted was that the hen, the mother hen, should sit on the Beitza in order to incubate the Beitza. Again, it hasn't grown to the state of being in a froach, but nevertheless he deliberately and actively with his two hands, he put the beitza underneath the tarnagolas. And Reish Lakish is asking, is it possible that Reb Shimon in this case would say it's certainly mukta, because you could talk about something that's, let's say, Eitzim Vavonim is mukta, it has no function, but what about something which he's makta biyadayim? Omalei. And Rabbi Yochanan responds, Ein muktza l'Rabbi Shimon. There is no muktza from Shimon except for one case. El Shemen Shebiner. So we're talking about the oil that was inside the lamp. He lit the lamp entering into Shabbos. And now the lamp goes out and he wants to take the oil. So that Rabbi Shimon allows. But let's say, Bishashu Dolik, we saw in the Mishnah already that if during the time that the lamp is actually burning, he wants to take off some of the oil, That's prohibited, even according to Rabbi Shimon. Now you might say, I don't need Rabbi Shimon for that, because taking the oil out of the lamp itself would constitute a malacha of kibui. But let's say some of the oil drips out of the lamp while it's burning. Rabbi Shimon agrees that that's muktza. And yet the shemen is something that's roi lachila. It's not like eitzim v'havonim, which is muktza because it's just simply unfit for any use. So we do have some case of muktza, which is muktza. Comes along Rabbi Yochanan, he says, you know what's unique about the case of the shemen that drips out of the ner while it's burning? Hoel v'huktza l'mitzvaso, huktza l'isuro. Now here, for our purposes, we're going to read the Gemara according to the Girsa of the Tosus Yeshanim. It's going to add a vav. Hoel v'huktza l'mitzvaso v'huktza l'isuro, which means that this is tarti l'reisa. This is two strikes against you. We have an overlap of two different status-size, so to speak, with regard to this ner that's dolek now. On the one hand, we have huktza l'mitzvaso, which means that this oil was dedicated for the mitzvah of lighting their shops. And we'll see later on with regard to noy sukkah that Reb Shimon is going to agree that noy sukkah is also stopping me many, and I'll let you use it for your own purposes during sukkahs, because it is huktza l'mitzvaso. So that's one category that applies to the ner and the oil in the ner of a ner Shabbos. Number two, it's also huktza l'isuro, which means that you're not allowed to tamper with the oil while the light is burning, because as we said back on Daf Mem Dalet, the Iser of Kibui kicks in. Says Rabbi Yochanan to Reish Lakish, only in those cases where we have an overlap of both huktza l'mitzvaso and huktza l'isuro does Rabbi Shimon agree that it's muktza. In the absence of one of those two factors, we would not have a muktza category that even Rabbi Shimon would agree. So let's take, for example, putting seeds into the ground, or you put the egg under the hen in order to incubate. That would not become muktza according to Rabbi Shimon. And even if you might argue that perhaps there is a huktza l'isuro, in the sense that once the seed takes root, it's going to be also to go near it, because it's an isur of tolesh, as we said before. But nevertheless, right now it's not yet mushrash. There's no rooting, and B, you don't have huktza l'mitzvaso. That element is for surely lacking, is absent. So therefore, as far as taking oil from the burning lamp while actively taking the oil, I don't need muktza for that. That's a malacha of kibui. However, muktza would extend to include, if it is applicable, and you accept muktza, the shemen that drips out of the lamp on its own. I mean, there you're not guilty of any malach of kibui. The oil is a roi lachila. It should not be muktza, according to Reb Shimon. But the answer is that we have a double entendre here. We have two strikes against you, an overlap of both huktza l'mitzvaso and huktza l'isuro. Now, that's only as long as the ner is burning. Once it's extinguished, then we don't have the principle of migu diskatsoy, according to Rav Shimon, and therefore you're allowed to enjoy the benefit of this oil. Now, the premise here of Rabbi Yochanan is Rabbi Shimon, if he only has huktza l'mitzvaso alone, that per se would not generate an iser muktza. So the Gemara immediately asks, v'lesle muktza l'mitzvaso, does Rabbi Shimon not validate an iser of muktza l'mitzvaso alone, even without huktza l'isur? V'asani, we have a brisa, sichacha kehilchasa. He put the schach on top of the dfanos. And now he has a kosher sukkah. The itra, and he decorated, he beautified it, bikramim ubisdinim, with certain kinds of sdinim, we call linens, and kramin are clothed, you know, colored clothing, and all this he draped over the sukkah to decorate it. Furthermore, talaba gozim, he hangs nuts, afarsikin, or peaches, shkedim are almonds, and goes usually are walnuts, rimonim are pomegranates. Other examples, he beautifies his sukkah with nice sukkah, which is called afarkale, shalanovim, clusters of grapes, atara shal shibolim, different kinds of beautiful wreaths of grains, yenos, shmonim uslosos. Maybe he put little bottles of wine or of oil or flour. Also, listapik mehen ad motzei yontif achron. He has to wait until the very last day of yontif, if in order to benefit from any of the above. Meaning, the first weekday after yontif, that's okay. But all these nice sukkah decorations for sukkah are considered huktzel mitzvaso. And therefore, they're also. The only exception is, again, we have to figure out if this brisa is in fact authored by Rabbi Shimon. We'll get to that later. The exception to the rule is im hisna leem, then akol lefi tno. That he doesn't have the shall we say, the power to set up a tnai, which in English you could call a condition or a stipulation. And he could declare before he, or as he puts up the noy erev yontif, he could say that he doesn't want this to be designated as huktzel mitzvaso. He may want to use it, he may want to eat it, and he makes that declaration. But in the absence of that declaration, he's prohibited, he's enjoined from using it and benefiting from it because it's huktzel mitzvaso. So the Gemara says, we might Rabbi Shimon he. And what's the raya that this brisa reflects the shita of Rav Shimon? Rav Shimon accepts the principle of huktzel mitzvah. So, Tani Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef kamei de Rabbi Yochanan. We have a brisa that was presented by Rabbi Chiya in the presence of Rabbi Yochanan. Ein notlin eitzim min asukah biyontif ela min asomachla v'Rav Shimon matir v'shovim b'sukah sachag b'chag shiyasura. So we're talking now about wood that came off the sukkah, got detached from the sukkah on yontif. Tanakhama says that you're not allowed to enjoy the benefit of these pieces of wood unless it's samachla. So I want to read to you this translation of samachla. And he says the following. Samachla. Well, let's go back to Eitzim min Asukah. Eitzim min Asukah Asuya Litzel B'yontim Shal Pesach Shavuos Asukah. So we're not talking about Sukkah in the strict context of the mitzvah of Sukkah, but rather we're talking about a hut, you know, that has schaf on top of it to afford shade, and we're talking about a different yontif. We're talking about Shavuos, Sukkah, Pesach, any of the Yom Tovim. And if the schach falls on yontif, so that you're not violating what we call stiras oel, which is melecha stira by taking apart the roof, but nevertheless, you're not allowed to enjoy the benefit of this schach, of these eitzim, this wood that was designated as the roof to your hut. Ela min asomuchlo, min achavilos ha'eitzim, she'enam miguf binyan asukah. So there are boards of wood that are used to support the hut from the outside, and the walls of the hut are supported, as we said, by these eitzim, and these eitzim are not part of the essential structure of the sukkah. If they're part of the essential structure, the sukkah, then for sure these would be muktzah l'mitzvah. So, or on the other Yom Tovim, they would be muktzah because of the Iser of Stiras Oel. Rabbi Shimon Matir, Rabbi Shimon allows you to enjoy the benefits of the Eitzim, even if they were placed there as part of the roof, as part of the structure, the Gufas Sukkah, if the Sukkah falls, because he holds that there's no Iser Tiltel of muktzah. But v'shavit, even Rabbi Shimon agrees that if we're talking about Sukkahs, and we're talking about anything that's part of the Gufas Sukkah, that's called Sukkas Chag B'Chag, then those boards, those pieces of wood, are prohibited for the entire 7 days of the Chag. So we see clearly that even Rav Shimon subscribes to the position of Huktzel Mitzvaso. Correct? How could it be, therefore, that you would tell me that, you know, as Rabbi Yochanan told Reish Lakish, that Rabbi Shimon does not accept Huktzel Mitzvah unless it overlaps with Huktzel Isura. And we have here Vishavin B'sukkah Sachag Shikshu. Again, we have the exception of Hisna Lehem. So at this point in the Sugya, the Gemara backtracks from its original position that Rav Shimon does not accept the Isur Muktzah unless it's both Muktzah Mitzvah and Muktzah Isuro. And the Gemara says, indeed, Rabbi Shimon prohibits even a Davash Huktzah Mitzvah Bilvad, that's all it has, even if it doesn't have the second element overlap of Huktzah Isuro. And that which Rabbi Yochanan told Reish Lakish, that according to Rav Shimon, there's no Isur except Rav Shimon only admits to muktzah in the case of the oil that's in the Nair, because it's huktzel mitzvah of a huktzel isuro. It doesn't mean that in order to generate an Isur, he needs that the Nair, it's mamish, you know, the Nair itself has to be huktzel gamla mitzvah of gamla isuro. But even in something that's ke'ein shemen shebener, ka'amrinon, there is a muktzah that Rav Shimon accepts, even if it's similar to the Shemen Shebener. That's what Rabbi Yochanan was telling Reish Lakish. And when Rabbi Yochanan said to Reish Lakish, Hoel v'huktzah li'isuro, what he meant to say was that the Zman Isur, in the case of Ner, is going to extend till the end of the mitzvah, which means hol v'huktzel mitzvaso, huktza li'isuro. So we're trying to answer the question, what did Rabbi Yochanan mean when he said to Reish Lakish that the din of chitin shezar makarko, or beitzim shetachas hatanagoles, as far as Rabbi Shimon Shita is concerned, is what? Is it like the Shemen Shebener, or is it not like the Shemen Shebener? Obviously, Rabbi Yochanan was trying to extract some principle here from the Shita, from the Hodah of Rabbi Shimon in the case of Shemen Shebener. What principle was he deriving from? The Gemara thought that he was deriving the principle that you need an overlap of both huktzah l'mitzvasa and huktzah l'isuro. And that seems to be the language of Rabbi Yochanan. Hoil v'huktzah l'mitzvasa v'huktzah l'isuro. So you have the overlap of both in the case of Ner Shabbos. And if that be the case, then we're stuck trying to understand why Noi Sukkah, according to Rav Shimon, which only has huktzah l'mitzvasa, should be asur. And we have an explicit brisa in Sukkah that commits Rabbi Shimon to the position that Asul is tafim men ad motzi yontif, as far as Noi Sukkah is concerned. So what do we do with Rabbi Shimon in Noi Sukkah? And how do we reconcile that with Rabbi Yochanan, who says that you need huktzel mitzvah and huktzel isuro in the case of Ner Shabbos, and that's where Rav Shimon accepts muktzah. and we reject the case of Docha B'Yadayim in Beitza and Chitin. So the Gemara fits this into Rabbi Yochanan's language. Now here's where we push it in. Again, Rabbi Yochanan didn't mean to say to Reish Lakish when he compared Rav Shimon's Muktzah of Shemen Shebener to a case of Hol V'Huktzel Mitzvah Suktzel Isuro that you need in order to generate the Isur on the Ner, both A, Huktzel Mitzvah and B, Huktzel Isuro. That's not what he meant. So the Gemara calls it Ke'en Shemen Shebener, which means that what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is that Huktzel Mitzvaso in and of itself would be enough to generate the Isur in terms of the Shemen Shebener. But Rabbi Yochanan wanted to point out that Rabbi Shimon has a limit in terms of time to the Isur of the Shemen Shebener. And what's that time limit? The time limit is Huktzel Isuro. That's going to limit the Huktzel Mitzvaso. Meaning, as long as there is an Iser in the Ner, which means the Ner is alive and well and active, and there's a flame, and that generates an Iser Kibui, if he would take the Shemen. But once the Iser Kibui is gone, i.e. the Ner is extinguished, and therefore you would have no problem taking the Ner as far as the Iser is concerned, taking the Shemen as far as the Iser is concerned, at that moment it's no longer Huktzel Mitzvaso. Why? Because the mitzvah of Ner Shabbos concludes or terminates with the Kibui HaNer. So that the language here of Rav Yochanan, again, it's a little unclear. You mean the Havamin is a little bit stronger than the Maskana because it says Huktzel Isuro. But what he means by Huktzel Isuro is as long as the flame is alive, that's called Huktzel Isuro because you're not allowed to take any Shemen because you would be in violation of Lechus Kibui, then it's Huktzel Mitzvaso. But what that means is that you can't use the drippings of the oil during that period of time while the Shemen is still lit. And that's because it's still Huktzel Mitzvah. So once it's no longer Huktzel Isuro, and you have no problem of taking the Shemen Mitzad the Isur because it's already extinguished, at that point the mitzvah concludes. So that the mitzvah and Huktzel Mitzvah extends only as long as the candle is burning. And Rav Shimon would ask of the candle as long as it's burning and you can't use the drippings that come out of the oil because it's Huktzel Mitzvah as long as it's burning. Now in the case of Sukkah, the nice Sukkah is Huktzel Mitzvah so for the entire duration of the Chag. And therefore you're not allowed to use and benefit from the nice Sukkah until after Yom Tov Achron Shel Chag. And let's add that as far as the Sukkah, the Noi Sukkah is concerned, which is Huktzel Mitzvaso, and therefore won't be Mutter until Motzei Achron Shel Chag, that applies even if the Sukkah would fall apart on Chol HaMoed. Why? Because it's still the Zman of the Mitzvah. It's Royal Mitzvaso. So for the entire balance of the Chag, the Sukkah is Royal Mitzvaso. So even if you were to take apart a Sukkah on Chol HaMoed, there would still be an Isur to benefit from the walls and the Schach and the Noi Sukkah up until the end of the Chag. That's called Huktzel Mitzvaso. So Huktzel Mitzvaso depends upon Zman HaRoy LeMitzvaso. Now getting back to the case of the Beitza and the Chitim, where it was Huktzel B'Yadayim, the impression I get here, and I'm still doing some research on this, is that Rabbi Yochanan's answer to Reish Lakish is that that is not a case which about which Rabbi Shimon would be moda that it's mukta, despite the fact that it was huktzah b'yadayim. Huktzah b'yadayim per se is not enough to generate mukta according to Rabbi Shimon. And the only single case that Rabbi Shimon has recognized mukta is the shemen as long as it's huktzah l'mitzvasa, which means as long as it's still alive and the flame is going up. After it's no longer huktzah l'isura, which means there would be no isur kibui, which means the light went out, at that point it's no longer huktzah l'mitzvasa. And then you're allowed to enjoy the benefits of the oil in the nair. Again, the language of Rabbi Yochanan still confuses me. I don't know why he had to add the huktzah l'isura business. He could have just simply said, "Kol zman haner dolek v'mitzvah kayemes is huktzah l'mitzvaso, is enough to create an iser." And in the case of nois sukkah, that would mean for the balance of the chag. I don't know. Itmar nami, we have another limud that came out, and perhaps would support this teretz, is Omer Abchia Baraba Rabbi Yochanan ein muktzah Rabbi Shimon el ke'ein Shemin Shebiner B'Shashu Dolek Hoel V'Huktzel Mitzvah Huktzel Yisuro. So here in this version, clearly Rabbi Yochanan added the word Ke'en, and the Ke'en is coming to tell you that as long as it has this Huktzel Mitzvah element, that's a case where even Rabbi Shimon would agree to Muktzah. And let's get back to food and ask ourselves, well, what kind of foodstuff would be mukta, even according to Rav Shimon? Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Shmuel, Ein mukta l'Rav Shimon el grogos v'tzimukim bilvat. So here's a case of a foodstuff that's edible, and yet Rav Shimon agrees that it's mukta. And again, the logic seems to be hukta via diet. So I'm not sure how we differentiate between that and the case of chitin and beitza. So let's hold off on that question. So what is grogos v'tzimukim? These are figs and grapes that are designated for drying up. You know, he wants to make dried figs or dried grapes, which are raisins. And what he does is, he opens them up and he puts them up on the top of his roof and the sun beats down and dries them up. But what happens is that very shortly after he puts them up on the roof, they are miskalkel. They become sour. You cannot eat them at that moment in time. And therefore, since he put them up on the roof, and he knows that immediately after they bake in the sun, they are going to be miskalkel, they're no longer edible. He puts them completely out of his mind. He has no intention to use them on Shabbos, and therefore it's also even according to Rav Shimon. Now, exactly how that fits into huktzah b'yadayim and not huktzah b'yadayim is something that we have to figure out, because l'chora, the case of the hen with the beitza or the chitim inside the ground is also hooked to be a dime. That's where I'm getting a little bit lost. Perhaps the answer is, I don't know, I'm just thinking out of the box here, is that in the case of grogos v'tzimukim, he has no idea if during the course of Shabbos they'll become suitable for eating, they'll become edible. He can't anticipate how long the process is going to take until they become edible. That's maksav yadayim, and that's mesiyat das. But in the case of chitim and beitza, in some part of his awareness, he knows that he might want to use these seeds and change their designation. He might want to use the beitza as is, and therefore it's not equivalent to the maksa b'yadayim of grogos v'tzimukim. Now, if you take a look at the Tosis, the Maskal Ella, about halfway down the Tosis, he says, Temel Ri. The Ri never understood, and he doesn't even answer this question, why Rabbi Yochanan when he wanted to answer Reish Lakish's question about the Beitza and the Chitim, why did he compare it to the Ner and the drippings of the oil in the Ner? Why didn't he just compare it to Grogos V'Tzimukim? And you know, you're tempted to think that maybe Rabbi Yochanan didn't have an answer to that question about Grogos V'Tzimukim according to the Ri. And therefore he introduces Ner, because Ner has both of these elements of Huktzel Mitzvah, Huktzel Yisura, which don't exist in the case of Beitza or Chitim. Now the Gemara asks, Umi the Achrini Lo? You have no other cases of Peros, where Rabbi Shimon would be Moda, that it's Miskalkel, and therefore it's Muktzah, other than Grogos V'Tzimukim, Asanya. Because again, the language of Rabbi Yehuda Meshvul is very extreme. Ain Muktzah, Rabbi Shimon Ella, Grogos V'Tzimukim Bilvad. Hoya Ochel Te'enim V'Hosir, V'Hela Lagag, V'Lasmen Grogos. So he's got extra figs that he doesn't need for his table. And he climbs up, he ascends to his roof, and he wants to make out of these tanim grogos, you know, dried figs. Or he has extra grapes, anovim v'hosir, and helim l'gag l'asmem tzimukim. Lo yochal, he shouldn't eat them on Shabbos. Anshi yazmin. Unless on Erev Shabbos, he already thinks in his mind that he's going to eat them on Shabbos. V'chein ata omer b'farsikin, v'chavushim, v'shar kol minei peros. Other types of fruits that he brought it up to the roof in order to dry them. And even if they don't become inedible when he puts them on the roof, nevertheless, since he put them on the roof and he wants to dry them, he is Mesiach Das, he decided he's not going to eat them until they get dried up. And therefore you're not allowed to take them on Shabbos in order to eat them. So these are peaches and quinces, okay, if you're interested. So now let's ask, who is the author of this brisa, Mani? Elam Rabbi Yehuda, it's impossible to say that Rabbi Yehuda is the author of the brisa. Umah hecha delo dachya b'yadayim isle. Muktzah, Rabbi Yehuda has muktzah, even in a case where there's no dachya b'yadayim. Is hecha de dachya b'yadayim lo kolshkein? So if Rabbi Yehuda is the author of this brisa, why does the brisa say that because he put him up on the roof and he did an act of dichya yadayim, let him leave it in his otsar without putting him up on the roof? We don't need the dachya b'yadayim. Rabbi Yehuda's shita is that even without dachya b'yadayim, it's muktzah if he puts it away and he doesn't intend to use it. Let's say, for example, we're going to have later on the case of te'enim or tmarim that he puts it away for sale and he doesn't intend to eat them. So we don't need that extra element of he brought him up on the roof and he was dachim v'yadayim. El olav, therefore, by process of elimination, Rabbi Shimoni, the author of this brisa, that even if he puts peros that are not yet miskalkel, right now they're perfectly good fruits, and he brings them up to the roof, and right now they're edible on the roof. They became muktzah the very moment that he put them up on the roof, which means that he's makzit b'yadayim. And this is a kasha on Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel, that ein muktzah Rabbi Shimon el grogos v'tzimukim. Grogos v'tzimukim is a case where at one moment in time they're like eitzim v'avonim, they're totally unsuitable, they're unedible. And that's where he says Rabbi Shimon would agree to muktzah. What about these cases of the fruits that he puts up on the roof, and right now, and who knows for how long, they're perfectly edible? Why is that muktzah according to Rabbi Shimon? It must be Rabbi Shimon goes a step further, and he has a principle called dachya b'yadayim. And perhaps at this point, we should really assume, in the Gemara's logic, that the case that Reish Lakish asked earlier about Beitza and Chita would certainly be Muktzah according to Rav Shimon, that's Dachi B'Yadayim. And the Gemara answers, Li'olam Rabbi Yehuda. Could be that Rabbi Yehuda is the author of this Brisa. Rabbi Shimon would not prohibit Muktzah and Helam Bagag even though it's Maktsavi Yadayim, because it's not like the case of Grogus Tzimukim, which is Einaroi Lachil, it's not edible. You'll ask me if this is Rabbi Yehuda, then why do we need Helam Lagag? Why do we need this act of Dechiyah B'Yadayim? As long as it's La'otzar and he doesn't intend to eat it, that should be sufficient to make it Mukta. So the answer is Mishum Ochel Itzrichle. Rabbi Yehuda wants to tell me a Chiddush that he was Holech V'Ochel, right? He put all these fruits on his table and he's eating them. And apparently, even as he's putting him up on the roof, he's still holech v'yochel. That's the emphasis here in this price of holech v'yochel. Nevertheless, they become mukta. In other words, without this price, Sakhadat Kamina, I would have argued, kevan di ka'achel v'yozel, since he's eating them as he goes up to the roof. He has demonstrated that he wants to eat it at any point, and therefore, even though he puts it on the roof, it's not mukta loli boy asmana, which means that they could be mutter and he could eat it at any time. Kamashbala no came in shehel and lagag asuchi aske l'day temine. He was mesiach das, and now we'd have to designate it again for achila. In the case of machnisa li otzar, where he locks it up for future use or marketing or whatever he does, if before he puts it there he would be olich v'ochel, is even Rabbi Yehuda would hold it's not mukta. Why? Because machnisan liotzer is not called makta biyadayim. But here's the case of Helen Lagag, and even though he's still eating from them, it's considered asuche asche adaitemine, and it's mukta. So let's just try to summarize what we've been saying over here. We thought that if Rabbi Yehuda is the author of the Braisa, then there's no need to add the condition of Dachi B'Yadayim. Now the Gemara is saying, no, we need the extra condition of Dachi B'Yadayim, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, because we're talking about a case of Ochel. And what does it mean, Ochel? Even though the person has been eating of them, now he has some extra fruits, and he decides to put the remainder, the extra fruits, out to dry up on the roof. I would have said, Kevan Tikachil Viazil, he's occupied in the act of eating the fruit, which means that he's demonstrating his intention to eat it. And if he could eat all of it, he would eat all of it. And therefore, lowly by Asmana. He should not have to explicitly prepare the remainder of the fruit for Shabbos use, because he's indicated that he's eating these fruits and he has every intention to eat them. And therefore, even when he puts it out to dry, it's not mukta, because we don't need azmana. We don't need that he prepare them and designate them for achila, because his actions speak louder than words, and he's interested, he's involved in eating them. Kamash Malon, Rabbi Yudin this Bryson tells me a big chiddush, that although he's continuing to eat them, and it would seem that in such a case, since he's preoccupied with eating them, he's implicitly demonstrating his intention to eat all of them. No. Once he does an act of putting him up on the roof, Kevan Shehel and Lagag, Asuche Asich Adait, he takes his mind off them, he doesn't plan to eat them on Shabbos, and then Mukta, even though he was previously involved in eating them, because he put him up on the roof, and he did an act of Maksavi Adayim, and therefore he needs Hazmana. And in the absence of Hazmana, it's going to be Mukta. Now, as far as Rav Shimon is concerned, he would argue on this price of Rabbi Yehuda. He would not generate any Iser on these peros unless they are miskalkil, unless at some point they become inedible. And here they did not become inedible. So just to summarize, according to Rav Shimon, the fact that he rejects something from Shabbos use, that doesn't make it into mukta, unless the item itself, objectively, is unfit for eating when we enter into Shabbos. Like in the case of Grogus Tzimukim, puts them on the roof, and then they immediately become miskalkil. According to Rabbi Yehuda, once you reject the item, and you don't prepare it for Shabbos, that's sufficient cause for making it to mukta. So that the Brice is ruling that even other types of fruits, although they did not become unfit for eating, nevertheless, they're rendered mukta because he puts them up on the roof. And this, even though he's involved in eating them. And in such a case, since he puts him up on the roof, there's no hachana over here. There's no hazmana. He needs hazmana. And that's the chiddush of this braisa. Now, we've come to the conclusion that according to Rav Shimon, if you actively set aside something that's not muktzo in a position that now it becomes unfit for achila, it is muktzo. He actively puts aside something, a foodstuff for example, and he puts it out of his mind, but it's still fit for use, it never became unfit for use, then it's not muktzo. Is boy mine Reb Shimon bar Rebbe. Mi Rebbe, here we turn to Daf Mem Hayam and Beis. Patzile Tamra Rebbe Shimon Mal. What's the status of dates that are unripe? On the one hand, no one would eat them. On the other hand, perhaps you could eat them. They're still royal achila. Omale ein muktzel Rebbe Shimon al grogus tzimukim bilvad. So these figs that go through a stage in which they're absolutely inedible and they haven't dried out completely to make them edible, that's muktza. So we have, number one, that he put the figs or the grapes out to dry in the roofs. He's actively rejecting them. Number two, but it's unfit for use, for consumption, until they're completely dried up. But once they begin to dry up, they're so sour you can't eat them. In the case of unripe dates, I don't know, in unripe dates you could say, A, he didn't reject them from Shabbos use, so there's no haksa v'yadayim, and therefore it's not similar to grogus tzimukim, which he put up on the roof. Or alternatively, perhaps these unripe grapes could be eaten b'shas hadchak. They're still edible. Now, patzile tamra are a certain species of dates that don't ripen on the tree. So they make baskets from palm leaves for the purpose of storing these dates, and while they're in the palm leaves, in this basket, that's what causes them to ripen. That's a catalyst. So the dates are really not fit for to be eating, but you can't say that they actively were rejected from Shabbos use. It's not like the case of grogus tzimukim where he put them up on the roof. So Reb Shimon bar Rebbe was wondering whether Reb Shimon would treat these patzile tamra as partially dried fruits or figs or raisins, if you want to say, that are also unfit for consumption and they're forbidden while they're ripening. But the answer is that here, in the case of patzile tamra, we're missing that element of dache biyadayim. So here's where we're going to stop for now. Ein, right? Ein muktzel Reb Shimon el grogos v'tzimukim bilvad. And now we're up to line 3 on Daf Mem Hey Omid Bey. So we'll go on and analyze more about the sheet of Reb Shimon with regard to maktzah v'yadayim.